start with a meditation. And this meditation we're going to do is just sit. Shikantaza is the name. So close your eyes. Let go of absolutely everything. There's nothing to do now. I assume you're all sitting. So take a breath or two to just kind of bring yourself into the body. And since you're already sitting, you have successfully engaged in the practice. Just sit. Now, this is a very powerful practice. In fact, in Mahayana Buddhism, it's regarded as the highest form of meditation there is. Doing nothing. If you are sitting, you are complete. Now you will notice that our minds don't like this. There's a feeling of what's next? What is this going to bring me? What are the results? Am I going to get enlightenment? It may even do things like, gee, I wonder what I'm going to have for dinner tonight, or did I leave the toaster on? All of that activity can go on while you just sit, doing nothing. Notice that you're not doing thinking. Thinking is just happening. You're not doing heart beating or blood circulation. It's just happening. You're not growing hair. It's just happening. While you just sit. If attention wanders away from just watching whatever's here, and you get engaged for a moment in whatever the story is, just notice that and say, this too. The three words, yes, this too, is a very powerful tool. Everything that happens within you, the beating of your heart, the sensations that make up the body, emotions that could arise, the thinking, memories, aspirations, past, future, are all a natural part of the human incarnation. And so you simply say, yes, this too. Could be an unpleasant sensation or a very pleasant one. The response is always the same, yes, this too. And see if you can notice that all of this is just happening, arising, subsiding, arising, subsiding. And you simply remain doing nothing. Everything else just happens. You're not sustaining your life. You're simply witnessing it. Yes, this too. You find your mind is really, really active. Annoyingly so, which it can be. Yes, this too. And bring your attention just to the motion of the breath that's just happening. Notice I didn't even say to try to slow your breath or deepen it. You just let it happen. The entire school of Soto Zen is based around this practice. Just sit. And notice that your awareness of all of this that arises and subsides is also just there. You can't really call it happening because it isn't arising and subsiding. It's just there. But again, you're not doing it. It just is. Awareness is always just sitting. Because it's always just being aware. Even if you're running a marathon or deeply involved in some complex intellectual activity, awareness just is. Can't help but notice awareness. Because without it, you wouldn't even be here. Just take a moment to just sit, and no matter what comes up, just say yes, this too. Notice that whatever happens is simply the nature of the experience of a human birth. Even if you find yourself totally distracted, yes, this too. So take a breath. Even if you fell asleep, say yes, that too. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. No matter how it went, right? We tend to want to judge our meditations by how peaceful was I. It's a bad measurement. Sometimes it's peaceful, sometimes it's chaotic, sometimes enormous emotion can come up. Ajahn Chah, who's a master in the Thai forest tradition, used to say, if you haven't wept deeply, you have not meditated yet. It is just this open door to whatever comes up. But here's a Dharma teaching in more modern language about what you just did, Chikantaza. This is from a lady named Lori Chapman. And she said, I like nothing more in the world than just listening, sitting on my ass, being happy, doing nothing. And it's not my fault I have this attitude, because I happen to have an amazingly comfortable ass. It may not look like much, but if you could sit on this baby for 2 minutes, you'd realize that getting off this ass is a crime against nature. On the first day, I was talking a lot about loving awareness. Yesterday, it ended up going quite into the sheer non-dual. So yesterday, I thought what I would do is I would start talking about the paradox in the human incarnation of choice. In the absolute, is there a choice, right? We could say there's no choice because there's nobody there to make a choice and the like. And yet, every day is filled with what appears to be choices, right? I'm not going to go in deeply into the whole mechanics of where's free will and what isn't, but suffice it to say that until one is conscious, some degree of awakening has taken place. We're not choosing anything. It is all conditioning. Much like a trained animal, before any kind of awareness or awakening takes place, we're trained animals. We are doing exactly the way we were programmed to do by our parents, by our history, by the culture. And in absolute reality, there is no dualism. There's no choices to be made. The ultimate self, no self, is not a person exercising free will. It's not choosing to do this or that. It's more like jazz. The stuff is just arising out of the nature of beingness itself. Like, you know, a great jazz improviser is not choosing the next note. They're just happening. They're growing out of their character, their life, their whole thing. So in between these, we all have the experience that we call choice. I even made a lot of notes about this, so I'm going to be referring to them. So embracing our humanness through loving awareness means we embrace this sense of making choices. And it's really important because, you know, we make them all day long. The question is, on what basis are we making them? What's the reference point by which we make a choice? When you're not conscious at all, there is no reference point. It's purely automatic. Now, when you do become conscious, you begin to see that, oh, this choice leads to there. This choice leads to there. This one leads to more suffering. This way leads to less suffering. Now, that would be great if it wasn't for the fact that conditioning is a powerful habitual pattern. So all of a sudden, we can find ourselves conscious saying, well, this path leads out of suffering. I'm going to take this path. And then you find yourself going in exactly the opposite direction. Everybody experiences this. What do you do with that? Every single moment we experience is actually asking us to choose. Now, set aside the purely non-dual idea that there's nobody there to choose anything and choices are just happening. That's actually true. But the experience we're having is very much, if I do this, I will experience suffering. Now, in unconscious, you're in a state of total illusion. So you're not at all conscious. You're in a state of ignorance because you don't know that this action is causing suffering, right? If I think this action is going to bring me happiness or abundance or any of that sort of stuff, I'm going to keep doing it, right? And I might even think that I'm just not doing it right enough. I'm not doing it good enough. I'm not doing it sincerely enough because you're ignorant of the actual cause. We haven't examined what the cause is. How does one make a decision between any two things? Well, understanding, discrimination, discernment, right? And ending our ignorance, knowing what the cause of suffering actually is. I'm going to make it really simple. I'm going to make the process simple. I got a whole bunch of things I wrote down here. So what's the reference point? Before you're about to take any action or even thinking, right, any thought that comes through, consciousness allows us the ability to discern and decide. So here's a criteria that I think is good for you. And that is simply, what is the best? When I'm in any decision I have to make, what is the best? And the very fact that I have to make a decision means I'm already conscious to a certain degree, because if I wasn't, I wouldn't be making the decision. It would just be happening. Right? What is the best? And by the best, I mean, what is the most loving? I always bring it back to love. That's my reference point. That's my criteria. It's not always clear what is the most loving thing to do, right? But nonetheless, what's the most loving? What's the most kind? What's the most tender? What leads to the deepest listening to somebody else? Refraining from hurtful speech. Pursuing understanding. Assuming ignorance and examining and scrutinizing closely. Compassion, non-judgmental, not critical. If you have any moment between the impulse to act or the need to act and the action itself, this can operate. Is what I'm about to do or say uplifting? Is it encouraging? Is it supportive? Is it honoring? Is it validating myself or somebody else? Is it bringing more of a sense of safety or less? Is it bringing more freedom or less freedom? Is it speaking from the point of view of abundance and fullness and wholeness and completeness and health, or from its opposite? Is it speaking to your highest truth, wisdom, flexibility, humility? Now, these are all criteria you can actually get behind. I think everybody here would get behind all of those. Nobody would have any argument with that, right? You see, this process of awakening is not just, you know, the big grand slam, right? The definitive aha, and then it's all over. Even Buddha, after his enlightenment, that glorious morning when he saw the morning star, and everything became clear. It all fell away, all suffering. It says he spent the next 49 days just integrating. Even the ultimate Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, the ultimate unparalleled enlightenment, had to be integrated into the human life. And the number 49 is interesting because it's 7 times 7, and throughout all mythological literature, and this is much of a story as it is history, is a myth to represent you in your Bodhi tree, 7 is the number of completeness. So what 49 days means is he sat there long enough to completely integrate this into his entire body, his human life, his activity, all of it, before he stepped out to become the, you know, the greatest teacher, in my opinion, that ever lived. So there is this period of integration. Now for us, I don't think anybody here has experienced that great unparalleled enlightenment. But as I mentioned the other day, D.T. Suzuki said, there are no enlightened beings, only enlightened moments. So if there's an enlightened moment, what happens? What's next? It makes the trip from here to here gradually over 49 days, 49 years, whatever it takes. And from there, eventually branches out until it completely dissolves conditioning and replaces it with pure freedom. And what happens is that our decisions now, because there's no ignorance left in any area of our life, right? I'm saying all ignorance is gone. You know, I got over here, ignorance is gone, right? I could say that for sure. Over here, not so sure about that. But any place where it is gone, I'm not really even choosing any, because why would anybody choose anything other than truth or love? But when I'm still in the midst of this place in between, this intersection between heaven and earth, where I am having to consciously integrate what I'm coming to see, as long as I'm there, I should be choosing the best. I should be choosing wherever I can and seeking to choose more. This is... Another little note here. What matters most to you, being right or being peaceful? Do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? Pick one. Let's see. There's probably no place. Well, notice that a lot of these things, all those qualities that are mentioned about love, truth, humility, compassion, and that sort of thing. We can start, of course, by showing it for ourselves. By recognizing that every stupid, ridiculous, painful thing you've ever done to yourself or to anybody else was the result of ignorance. It was the result of unconsciousness. It wasn't a personal failing. It's not that you're broken, you're flawed in some way, that you're a defective model that has to go back for reprogramming. It means that you are unconscious. And there's unnecessary suffering, which is about 98% of what we normally experience. It's the stuff we just kind of do stupidly. But there's 2% that's necessary. And that 2% is the self you awakening to actually see the consequences of your own actions. When we see that when I did this, this happened, and it really hits home, it's a self-correcting mechanism. That's a genuine kind of suffering. The suffering of recognizing that I just hurt somebody so badly, it's going to affect them for the rest of my life, and I can't undo that. Or I did this to myself. I made this choice that completely changed put me on a trajectory that makes it almost impossible, maybe impossible, to actually get to where I wanted to go. When I see that and it hits me right here, that's necessary suffering, which leads to remorse, genuine remorse, which leads to repentance, right? And the word repentance has gotten trivialized by its use in Western religion. The original meaning of the word is an alchemical transformation. It means it's a complete shift of perception of how you see the world that ends up reflecting itself in speech and action and thinking. And so going from just applying this to you, and I keep trying to keep an eye on the time here, so I make sure that we have lots of time for questions on our last day. It now naturally turns outward as to how we treat others. Being in relationship, there's nothing more challenging and nothing that brings more of the unconsciousness and ignorance to the surface than being in relationship. Which is why it is so incredibly important. There's this middle way, this fine line we have to walk, a razor's edge between compromise and self-assertion. In relationships, it's what it's all about, isn't it? We have to compromise in order to have harmony between ourselves and our partner. Right? And I'm going to talk mostly about intimate relationships where it gets very, very close, but applies in all relationships. But in intimate relationships, your lives have so intertwined, right? That it's like you're one being. There's this interdependency going on that's constant. There's a reliance in areas, right? That takes place. And so there's the opportunity to become lazy and demanding, right? Or to become the opposite of always giving. Right? This notion of healthy boundaries. I really don't like that word, but I don't know what other word to specify. It's really, at what point is this compromising going too far? Am I compromising who I am, my own integrity? And how do you find that line? This is, and where else would you be able to say, well, what's the most loving? The most loving for me, the most loving for my partner, the most loving for everyone whose lives we touch. I now have to find this equation that is very lacking in this world. It's like, well, how do we find the best for everyone concerned? Not just the benefit of one or the other. So you're looking to guard your own territory. You're also looking to respect somebody else's territory. And then how in the world, in the middle of this, do you experience the kind of total open and nakedness that allows for intimacy? I'm not going to give you any answers to that other than that, my little list from before. I'm just going to invite you into the actual whole point of human existence, of this incredible, mysterious miracle that is a human birth. I mean, really, where did this come from? Nobody planned it, you know? You didn't sit around somewhere and think, I think I'm going to invent a world that looks like this, and I'm going to have this experience, and I'm going to convince myself I'm this one little body mind in this whole little. We didn't do that. This shit just happened. And here we are. Now, what do we do with that? I think I'm going to skip over some stuff here, because I have a whole lot. I think the whole point of human birth is like a game that you're thrown into the game, and the object of the game is to learn how to play the game. That there is no rule book. And so we have to kind of make it up on our own. And so to do that, we need some kind of criteria by which we're going to do it. We have to discover what the rules are. And I've discovered one rule. You know, every other rule that I've come across, it's questionable. But there's one rule that I've come to, that the whole point of human life is to confront in every moment the opportunity or the challenge or the choice, either open my heart or close it. To either say yes, this too, or say no, not that. My personal experience is whenever I say no, not that, I suffer. I feel empty. Something's missing. But every time I say yes, this too, with all the sincerity I can muster, even though my whole energy, my conditioning does not want to say that, something happens. Something opens, and I feel happy. That's my criteria. as simple as that. It's the only rule I've found. Let's see if I got anything else in here. Choice happened. Those results. I'm gonna leave it at that. I've got a few quotes here that I wanted to share with you guys that I'm gonna throw in here really, really quickly. This one is from Thomas Merton, the famous mystic monk, Christian monk, talking about what we're doing. And you know, we make these choices. The final caveat to all of this. I'm going to make this choice now that I'm going to consciously make the choices based on love. What's the most loving thing I can possibly do? And then the mind will expect, okay, well, then it's all going to work out okay. No. This is from Thomas Merton. Do not depend on the hope of results. You may have to face the fact that your work will be apparently worthless and even achieve no result at all, if not perhaps results opposite to what you expect. As you get used to this idea, you start more and more to concentrate not on the results, but on the value, the rightness, the truth of the work itself. You gradually struggle less and less for an idea and more for specific people. In the end, it is the reality of personal relationship that saves everything. Which of course coincides with what I quoted from the Buddha yesterday, the delight in the personal realization of Buddha knowledge. This place, human life, is the place of relationship. Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Gary Snyder, who is also an environmentalist going back to the late 60s, was interviewed when he was 84 years old. And they asked him, said, well, look what's happening. In the 50 years you've been doing this, look what's happening. Species disappearing, global warming, everything's gotten worse. He said, what's your advice? And his advice was, don't feel guilty. If you're going to save it because you love it, not because you hate them that are destroying it, or because you feel obligated or guilty. Do it because you love it. The political analyst, brilliant writer, also Pulitzer Prize winner, Chris Hedges, said, I fight fascism not because I can win. I fight fascism because it's fascism. It puts such a perspective on it. The choice to love in every circumstance can't be driven by the potential for what you're going to get out of it. Then it's not really love. That's another quote here. Do you mind? Yeah. Oh, from Krishnamurti himself. Relationship is a process of self-realization. Relationship is as a mirror in which you begin to discover yourself. In strictly Advaita Vedantic terms, when you hear some teachers talk, relationship is completely irrelevant. But this is the middle way. It is not the pure indulgence, and it is not the pure austerity. It is the middle way. The embracing of human life as it is. So when you know success, it brings you joy, happiness. When you know failure, it brings you humility and wisdom.